Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, August 26, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Dr. Kiki.
Behind the boards, our excellent producer, Eric Lenigan.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Good.
We're looking forward to a day of tech news today. With Scott Johnson joining us as well. Hey, Scott.
Hey.
Oh, hey. It's good to be here. Good to see you both. I'm excited to both be here and join in on the fun. That's kind of the same thing, so I don't know why I'm saying it twice. But thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here to talk about some tech.
If you don't know Scott Johnson, then you don't watch The Instance or The Film Sack or The Forced Forecast or The Current Geek or... I always forget the gaming show. I want to say Game On, but what's the gaming show you do?
The Final Score.
Final Score.
Yep. So, yeah, if they're not listening and watching to those things, they ought to be because you got nothing better to do, so do it.
If you're not listening or watching those, then you haven't seen Scott till now.
Nope.
But
he's here now.
Hello and welcome.
RIM is extending an olive branch, according to Don Reisinger at CNET. Research in Motion, of course, and in India, under the gun again. For having encrypted emails, and India wants access to them. They gave them an August 31st deadline. Now, RIM says it wants to create a forum where their company and other mobile telephone companies could work with the Indian government to, quote, support the lawful access needs of law enforcement agencies while preserving the legitimate information security needs of corporations and other organizations in India.
I think this is a good move. I mean, India's population is gigantic, which means it's probably a huge part of their international sales. So being able to work something out with India is really important. And if they're creating a forum that potentially, like they've said, we don't do specific deals. So maybe with this forum, they could start working something out that'll be a one-size-fits-all answer for countries across the board. So they don't have to, like, change the way they do things every time somebody has a problem.
And this has got to be annoying as hell for RIM because they've had to go through this in so many different countries. They've gone through it in Russia, China, most recently Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, now India. Other countries are starting to make noises. And you got to figure, they're like, look, guys, we've gone through this in other countries, but every country has its little political dance that they make RIM go through.
Well, Dr. Kiki, you said something interesting. You said the population of India is growing so exponentially. This seems like a huge nightmare to me that if the government ever did come to RIM and say, look, we need the records of all of New Delhi, what a nightmare it is to not only produce the records, but then for the Indian government to go through it trying to find it, you know, whatever the heck it is. It seems like there's, you know, security and obscurity in this case because there's so many people using, you know, potentially, you know, using RIM services. It just seems crazy that you would want to comb through that for anything.
Right. So there's got to be some kind of they've got to work something out. I mean, you're right. It would be such a load on RIM if they don't have some kind of a protocol where they say, okay, this is what we're going to give you and how much information we're going to give you because this is what's easy for us. And then you have the work cut out for you, give it in for the Indian government.
Well, and that's the thing. They've worked this out before, right? They just got to go through it one more time. Next week is going to be the Apple announcement on September 1st, and the speculation is rampant right now. Is rampant the right word? I mean, sure. A lion is rampant on a
killing spree?
When you have, what is it when a lion is rampant on a coat of arms? Does that mean it's like up with its paws up or something? I'm not sure what it means in that context, but Apple is definitely the same way. Right now, they got their paws up. They're rampant on the coat of arms of technology. And there's some speculation going on that we might see social networking type features in iTunes next week. The sort of like sharing your playlists, sharing what you're listening to now, sort of a Last FM sort of approach. Mm-hmm. Not the actual songs, just the information about what you're listening to. But more exciting to me, wireless syncing between iOS devices and iTunes.
Yes. This is what we want, what we're waiting for. It would make life so easy.
We've been waiting for this since the first iPhone, so that'd be really, really nice. But to the rumor of the social networking, I have a thought about this. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to compete with not so much the MySpaces anymore, but the Facebooks of the world. When they get to a certain critical mass, it's like, why do we even try? Who needs a new social networking platform? And the only companies that can sort of get away with it would be somebody with an existing base of lots of users using something. Good examples of this in the gaming space are like Steam on the PC, or Xbox 360's Live system, or even more recent Blizzard Entertainment's efforts with their Battle.net system. It's a huge bunch of dedicated people that are willing to say, oh yeah, we'll try your new connectivity and your new social networking system that you're building into this thing we already love. And that maybe leads to, you know, being able to really compete in that space. And if there's one of maybe a few companies that could probably pull this off, given the install base, it's probably Apple.
Yep.
There's nothing... there's not even a licensing problem with them doing wireless syncing, as long as they have a secure way to do the wireless transfer, so you can't like broadcast your entire library to the whole neighborhood accidentally. Yeah. There's no reason they can't do this, so why wouldn't they?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And you know, you're going to see new iPods, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but you're going to see all kinds of new hardware tied in with this. You're going to see all kinds of excitement with how people are going to be able to use these devices moving forward. And why not an Apple platform? I mean, it's as good or as strong as any. It's all about implementation at this point. Hopefully they've got, you know, they've learned something from the security woes of Facebook over the last couple of months. Maybe they can implement something that will tie people together through music and make it, you know, make a real run for what Facebook and others have already sort of done.
Yeah. This is all rumor though. So we'll know next week.
Yeah, pretty clear we'll see some kind of iPod Touch announcement. Yeah. There is a Chinese case manufacturer showing off cases for the new iPod Nano that makes it look more like the Shuffle. So that could be kind of interesting. So it's basically a
touch
square case. No, iPod Nano.
Oh, I see. Way up there.
Yeah, up there at the top. Those little blue and pink square things would be the new iPod Nano. It'd be half the size of the current Nano, all screen.
And totally the easiest thing to lose ever.
Are you sure those aren't just new cases for the new iPod Shuffle?
Possibly, yeah.
My guess is those are for Shuffles. I mean, Apple already did this once, right? Where they totally yanked the rug out of the existing model of the Nano and totally changed it the next year and then turned around and changed it again the next year.
Yeah,
I can't see them doing that one more time like that. That seems, even for Apple, I know they like to refresh and iterate and all that, but that seems even weird for them.
And people just forget about iPods these days when they're covering this stuff. Not when you have one, but you know when they're talking about it's almost like they get bored. If it's not about the iPad or the iPhone, forget it. But those iPods are still selling in large numbers. And the iPod Nano, if it came out as an all screen 3 centimeter by 3 centimeter screen, it'd be pretty slick.
Yep, I think you're right.
Going to lose those things. They're going to fall out of stuff. They're going to break.
That's what everyone said about the Shuffle, and they were right, but they still sold.
They still sold. It just makes it easier to sell more. You know, you lose it. Oh, I got to buy it again. Oops.
The MPEG Licensing Association, they're the group responsible for the patent licensing of the MPEG video codec standards that are often used for H.264, have said they are going to make their product royalty-free forever.
Whoa.
Which is awesome.
Earlier this year, extended the limited moratorium on licensing fees until 2015. Today, they said the period of the moratorium for the life of its AVC patent portfolio licensing effectively makes free-to-view H.264 encoded video royalty-free indefinitely. That free-to-view is important. If you're making some sort of machine or software, you're going to have to license the encoding standard. But if you're just putting up a video that's encoded in H.264, you don't have to pay royalties on it.
Which is great. It just makes it that much easier, and it'll promote people making videos and using the standard that much longer, knowing that it's going to be free after 2015, which isn't that far away, really, when you think about it.
It does take the wind out of the sails of Google with their WebM or VP8 codec, which was supposed to be a royalty-free replacement for H.264, so you wouldn't have any worries about it. What's interesting is they've stirred up enough mud that a few people doubt that VP8 is actually entirely unencumbered, that there might be some patent problems for VP8. So with H.264 coming in and saying, hey, you know exactly what the licensing situation is with us. If you're not Hulu or a Blu-ray disc, you get to use it for free. No worries.
No worries.
And then you're looking at WebM where they're like, yeah, we're totally free too for everyone. Totally license free. And people are like, I don't know. You might have something you missed. I'm going to go with H.264.
Yeah. And the question of what they missed, it might be patent issues that are held by other companies, little process patents, parts of what make WebM what it is, that could come up and bite WebM in the butt at some point.
It's also an issue of acceptance and install base, and there's already an enormous acceptance of H.264. This isn't a problem right now. Like, we're nobody's sitting around complaining going, man, I wish we had a better free codec. It's fine. So the fact that they extend this just says, well, look, that thing we're already using and everybody's already happy with, and there's already tons of Blu-rays and DVDs and everything else based on this standard, we'll just keep going. Like, it's like MP3s. We're not going to mess with the system. Let's let them just last forever. And look how long MP3s lasted. It's crazy.
I guess MPEG LA could change their mind down the road, right? Mm-hmm. They could change the moratorium back.
That's the only risk, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So could Google, though. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, that's true.
Anybody could do whatever they want. But it's, I don't know. I just think this is interesting maneuvering because we're basically talking about the ability for me and you and site creators and content deliverers to be able to continue to provide the video content without having to pay a bunch of money. And I don't see how that ever changes, because in the end, no one's going to stand for that. They'll come up with a third standard or a fourth standard that's free. And the minute they go free, you know, somebody starts rattling their sabers that's going to cost money, we'll move on to something else. I mean, that space has to be license free for viewing. It just has to be.
I do feel like this locks it up for H.264, which is, you know, nobody making a video camera is going to worry, right? Even though it says you got to do it for non-commercial purposes in the license, they're going to say, yeah, encode it to H.264. That one's clear what we can do and what we can't.
Yep.
Hulu is going to continue to go H.264. Blu-ray discs are going to be encoded in H.264. This looks like, unless something changes, we're going to be living in an H.264 world from now on. It's an H.264 world. We just live in it. It's also a world where travel and expense are two things that go hand in hand. And so we'd like to thank our sponsors, GoToAssist Express, for helping you save some time and money, making you look like a hero to your clients and colleagues. Here's how it works. You've got to help somebody out, right? So you start your session, just one click. You send the person you're helping an instant email invitation. Doesn't matter if they have a PC or a Mac. Then you share your screen. You can see what's on theirs. They see yours. Or you share your screen. They can share theirs. So you can see the problem they're seeing. And it includes an integrated live chat so you can have a conversation while you're online. You diagnose the problem. You can tell what software is running, what operating system, all that stuff. You fix the problem, you're done. You didn't have to leave your desk. You didn't have to pick up a phone even. You didn't have to travel or do anything. GoToAssist is brought to you by Citrix, and all data exchange during your session is completely secure. They use end-to-end 128-bit encryption. So try it out for free for 30 days. GoToAssist Express. Visit GoToAssist.com/TNT. You don't have to pre-install software. Just try it out free for 30 days. See if you like it. Thanks to GoToAssist Express for their support. Google is giving real-time search its own page. Real-time search being that the thing that shows you Twitter and some other stuff.
And some other stuff, not just Twitter. They do
mostly.
But the interesting thing is that they're paying for the Twitter fire hose to be able. Google is actually paying.
Well, they have to pay for that data to get all that stuff. But they also, let's see, if I put in Dr. Kiki in the new Google real-time page.
It's Google. What is it? Google.com/real-time.
Dr. Kiki Hurt, MD,
there's another doctor.
Posted on Facebook. We get a lot of Thursday on Twit Live about Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. It's mostly Twitter stuff. I don't see any news stories here.
Twitter.
Let's see if I put in.
Maybe you could put in
Marzipan.
You think there are news stories about marzipan right now?
The bear wife said, yes, actually. I've never been able to swing more than a bite of halva or marzipan for that very reason. I'm glad I know that.
I'm sure you could set up a search on something topical like Obama or stem cells.
Oil
and with
spill.
And, yeah, or with search
now
terms.
Now I get something from the Associated Press.
Yeah. And you can probably use the Google include or disinclude certain terms.
But it's the Associated Press Twitter feed. It's still Twitter and Facebook that's showing up here.
Because that's the real-time stuff.
That's the thing. I mean, this to me, I don't really kind of can't quite get this because it seems like I can just do this in Twitter. Like I can, if that's all the results I'm getting, and there's a smattering of Facebook here, but mostly it's Twitter. I can just search for these terms in Twitter and get the same kind of result in my Twitter client on my phone.
This moves. This updates as it goes, right? So as somebody posts something about oil spill, it moves down and a new posting comes up, so you can keep track of it in real time. That's what's interesting.
Right. And hopefully what they're going to do is integrate multiple sources so that as they improve it, it'll just become more and more data rich in real time. I talked to search expert Marshall Clark, who's the head of search at dig.com. He said the one thing about this we might want to mention is how difficult it is to weight the authority of different pieces of content in real-time search. So it's easy to filter a fire hose of content to, say, only display posts that include the query stem cells. What's more difficult is deciding which stem cell posts are most authoritative on the top. What if Justin Bieber tweets something versus a stem cell researcher? In traditional search, you could just track the reputation of the publication URL itself, like the New York Times. Now engines need to look at not just the publication source, Twitter, but also the author of the content, whoever it happens to be on Twitter, and ideally the reputation of that author across all channels. So if it's somebody like Michael Stebbins at Science Blogs, Federation of American Scientists, White House Science Council, et cetera, assessing the reputation of the author's content across social media and other real-time channels is difficult, and few search engines are doing it well at this point, including Google.
So what's really new here is the fact that before you would have this little section that said like latest results for oil spill, and it would move and update as they got new information from Twitter and Facebook. Now, in addition to that, you'll have a thing on the left side called updates that you'll be able to click on to go directly to the real-time search results. And you'll have that google.com/real-time mm-hmm. if you just want to look at just real-time results. I don't know if it's going into the top level search or not. I don't see it in the top level navigation where you can get books, finance, all that stuff. But it is over there on the left side under the name updates. So
I did a little non-scientific test here and searched for the word dude.
Yeah.
you would be shocked at the increase of the term dude right around the lunch hour. Like they show the little chart from, here's today, August 26th. And it shows from midnight till however we are current. And right around noon, 11:30 noon, just starts to go crazy with the word dude.
Yeah, I like that little chart, actually. That's pretty cool.
You can the dude chart.
Yeah, you can pick up some interesting trends that way. All right, let's move on to more Samsung Galaxy Tab news. A video preview came out in Korea. This time it shows the entire GUI of Android's of the upcoming Samsung Froyo tablet. If you haven't heard about it, it's an Android 2.2 tablet, WCDMA 3G, 802.11n Wi-Fi, 1610 screen ratio. It's only 7 inches diagonal, and it has a front-facing camera dedicated to video calling. Video starts out kind of showing how it fits between the iPod Touch and the iPad.
I feel like it's the Three Bears.
And then when you start looking at it, it looks like it is a mini iPad.
Yeah.
Because it has the same sort of response to the finger when you slide around. It has an on-screen keyboard. Of course, this one's in Korean, but
you'd almost call it a ripoff.
This one's
so many of the design elements, whether it's the software or any of the on-screen stuff, looks just like Apple's.
Yeah, it's a really good looking tablet, though. I mean, that's the thing. Because I watched it and I was like, yeah, it kind of looks like an iPad. All this stuff works like an iPad. Dials like an iPad. Touchscreen seems to work like an iPad. Okay, but it can make phone calls, which the iPad cannot do.
It has a
video element, which the iPad can do, but it has a front-facing camera, so you can make video calls, which the iPad can't do. So everybody's very excited about the Samsung Galaxy Tab. And we'll try to, you know.
Especially in Korea.
Yeah, where they're going to get it first.
Yes, of course.
All right. A new government accountability office study looked at the wireless industry since 2000 and found a couple things. One won't surprise you. Consolidation amongst wireless carriers has increased severely. However, the usage of wireless services has increased, cutting cell phone bills by 50% in the last 10 years.
Which is huge. That's amazing.
So as it has become more difficult for small and regional carriers to be competitive, prices dropped. 2008 prices were only half of what they had been in 1999. Now, that doesn't mean they aren't going back up. But, you know, we did hear about the $40 Virgin Mobile plan that's supposed to be coming any day now. That's a drop in price from a different carrier, obviously.
I wonder,
and we've had these everything plans,
right? They've gotten cheaper as there have gotten to be more and more carriers. The service areas have gotten bigger. I wonder what's going to happen though in the next 10 years when more people are going to be using data in a heavier and heavier manner, and that's going to become a more significant part of the phone, you know, quote unquote phone bill.
I wonder where the dip bottoms out.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to say 1999 versus 2008, it's 50% less. 1999, cell phone bills were rather expensive because cell phones were rare. They were luxury items still for the most part. I didn't even have a cell phone in
1999. I actually got
my first cell phone in 1999. Not the first cell phone I used, but the first cell phone that I bought for myself was in 1999. It was a little Samsung Sprint flip phone thingy.
Yeah, I remember those guys.
God, I must have. I don't remember how much I paid, but it was around $70 a month.
Yeah,
you know, and those bills went down and down and down for a while until, like you said, the smartphones came, and then the bills started going back up and up and up. So I bet we've already passed the bottom of that curve.
Right. So if we start looking at this year's data or even next year's data compared, it's going to be completely different.
Now, we haven't cut Scott out of the conversation, by the way. We're having problems getting him back on Skype. We had a connection loss. So we'll bring him back in as soon as we remake a connection. But
that may have happened just now.
Let's first, there he is. Hey, Scott. Sorry about that. Let's talk about this Intel mind reading computer. You were looking into this.
Yeah, I love this. I love the idea of this, that Intel's been coming up with all sorts of different ideas, implanting chips into your head. You know, how are you going to control the devices of the future? And so this new idea that they're working on is how to control your computer with your mind alone. You know, the problem with it so far is this. They've done some testing. Seems to work. They can compare between words, differentiate between words like screwdriver, house, and barn, and tell the electrical activity that's happening in the brain that differentiates each word. But they're using magnetic resonance scanners, which aren't little things. So they're not
something you can plug into your USB port.
No. To put it very, very bluntly, yes. No,
you don't have a USB fMRI.
USB fMRI. Ah, that's going to be awesome.
Give it some time. I'm sure this stuff will shrink down to that. But just so I understand this right, they can tell the difference between me thinking about a screwdriver and a barn.
Yes.
Or the words.
The exact words.
Yeah, which is even harder, actually.
Yeah, so getting the words differentiated from the actual images or the concepts that arise in your brain, you know, those are going to be different, but I think it's a really interesting technology. The ability to there are personal devices now where you have these little game controllers that you can put on your head and be able to move a cursor around on a screen once you learn how to control it.
Yeah,
properly.
And there's that toy where you can levitate the ball just by thinking and
right. The stuff like the levitating the ball, it just takes like mass energy of your brain. It's like your brain is turned on and you're thinking about it, or you're like calming your brain down. So, but being able to differentiate between the discrete signals or the summation of particular signals.
Being able to type words into Google with your mind.
Screwdriver. Yeah.
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 That takes a lot more.
Move a cursor, be able to control some software, an app. You know, that takes a lot, and it's really interesting. I love that they're working on it. Not user-friendly just yet, I think.
This is going to be one of those things that's going to come along when I'm really old And I'll be like, why can't you kids use a mouse? I can't make this mind control Intel crap work. Just give me a mouse.
And a book with paper.
Oh, Grandpa.
And a newspaper while you're at it.
Yeah. This scares me. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, this is sort of a step in that weird direction where, I don't know, I love progress and I love this kind of science. And I think this stuff is really interesting and cool. But this is getting closer to, like, crazy town to me. The idea that a computer could tell that I'm looking for a screwdriver on Google, is there something inherently creepy about that to me?
I much prefer this to actually implanting something in my brain. So if it, you know... Something like that's a little less invasive.
True. I suppose so. That's true. It's always a cheap thing when you have to implant something in your brain. You know, just read my brain.
Just read my mind.
It's a lot more elegant.
Yeah.
If you were reading my mind now, you'd know it's time for News Fuse. iPhone users rejoice! You can now stream movies from Netflix to your extraordinarily tiny screen. The long-awaited iPhone Netflix app launched today. Users can access their instant queue or browse the Netflix catalog and watch instantly.
If I had an iPhone, I would be excited.
Trying to get mine out.
But I don't. You're reaching
there.
For it.
Hey, it's right there.
Android users, you still have to wait.
How do you feel about it, Tom? Did you have a chance to play with it and mess with it?
Yes, it is. It works great. It's very tiny.
Yeah, I don't like
it. Tiny screen, and it's only streaming, not downloading. So, moving on, Adobe updated their online version of Photoshop, known as Photoshop Express. As of Wednesday, you no longer need an account on Photoshop.com to use the online editor. Other tweaks aim to make the online experience more like a desktop experience of Photoshop elements.
In a presentation at Stanford's Hot Chips Conference, Hot Chips, ARM discussed making chips for the server market. The upcoming architecture is codenamed Eagle. One feature of the architecture is virtualization, which could lead to allowing customers to choose which operating system they want on their mobile phone. Would you like your Droid 5 with Android, Migo, or WebOS, sir?
I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, I know.
Elliptic Labs is set to debut touchless gesture user interface technology that uses ultrasound to recognize the motion of the user's hands. This is exciting.
What do they call it?
They call the tech... Mime sign. Yeah, mime sign.
How does it block out your sleeves and your other stuff moving, your keys bouncing around? I don't buy this.
Anyway, they plan to showcase this at IFA in Berlin starting September 3rd.
According to Panda Labs, 25% of new worms in 2010 have been specifically designed to spread through USB storage. Back to the old physical spread of viruses. They surveyed 10,470 companies across 20 countries. Approximately 48% of small to medium businesses admitted being infected by some type of malware over the last year, and 27% confirmed the vector was indeed a USB device.
Yes. It's a new floppy.
It is. LG's display developing subsidiary will begin mass producing 9.7-inch color e-paper panels and 19-inch monochrome but flexible e-paper screens by the end of the year. Would you like color or bendy?
I'll take bendy. Target has started rolling out a new electronics trade-in program designed for mobile devices and video games. In participating stores, customers can trade in their iPhone, iPod Touch, or any cell phone, or a video game. Customers will receive a gift card for as little as a few dollars, up to more than $200 per item, depending on the product and its condition.
Nice. Google Voice is apparently quite popular. Google posted to Twitter today that 1 million calls were placed in the first 24 hours of the Google Voice being available from Gmail.
And the Ninth Circuit Court has declared that attaching a GPS tracker to your car as it sits in your driveway or on a public street is totally legal and can be performed by the police without needing a warrant. Other courts have come to a different conclusion previously, including the influential U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. So it looks like this one will be decided by Diana Ross's friends, the Supremes, in the court.
Meh, meh, meh,
Hey, don't forget we're going to Dragon Con, folks. On September 4th, we will be doing our meetup from 6 to 8 p.m. If you would like to attend, send an RSVP to Lisa at twit.tv so we can get a kind of a handle on how many folks are going to arrive. But it's at the Sundial Restaurant. You don't have to be part of Dragon Con to arrive.
Awesome.
Or to attend. You don't have to be part of Dragon Con to arrive, go in the door, do anything. Why did I say arrive?
Arrive.
That was really odd.
You have arrived.
You have arrived.
That's nice.
A drunken mortgage worker at Rand Life Home Loans. You know Rand Life Home Loans, right? It's in Salt Lake City, Scott.
Of course, yes. They're a huge household name. Or actually, I've never heard of them before.
Well, you've heard of them now because one of their employees took out the company's $100,000 server with a 45.
Oh, my God.
He blamed the damage on an imagined assailant who he said mugged him with his own weapon, drugged him, and then broke into his office to shoot the server. Police weren't buying it, apparently, and they arrested him.
Yeah, I think he got the order confused. It was probably that he took some drugs, got confused, imagined somebody, tried to shoot them, and hit the server.
Yeah. Investigations alleged that Campbell had been drinking that night at the Twilight concert in Pioneer Park with a coworker, and so, yeah, the drugs were alcohol.
Yes.
And the mugger was himself, and it was his 45, and he did shoot the server.
And he was reliving office space.
Yeah, something.
His own version.
I'm like, you know what? I don't care about your fake story of what happened. I want to know why you, in your drunken haze, why you decided
to get that damn server.
Show Bob from accounting.
I'm gonna show him.
they didn't say anything about the state of the hardware, did they? I'd love to know how that thing fared. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Did he blew a blade apart or not?
Did he pierce the hard drive or not? This is like, this is important. Was he trying to recover his tracks from something? Maybe.
Dumb people in Utah. What's going on?
Hey, all the famous people come from Utah, including this guy. All right. Finally, two different viruses, and we mean real viruses, like the sort of like half alive, half not alive things that infect you and give you the
nature,
flu.
In nature.
Yeah.
Not in the virtual world.
Two different viruses have been used to create the cathode and anode for a lithium ion battery, which means spray on batteries?
Yeah, or built-in batteries, grown into fabric batteries. These batteries are so exciting. There's a lab out of MIT, and researcher Angela Belcher's Biomolecular Materials Group, and they've been working on this since 1994. Last year, they came out with a paper in the Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences that was kind of outlining how it might work using viruses. And this year, Mark Allen, who's a postdoc, outlined the use of a new cathode that's made with iron fluoride. And it's all built by these viruses. Now, you might be so going, viruses, why would I want a virus-made battery? Is the battery going to make me sick? Is it going to infect me?
I'm going to get infected with the battery and then get superpowers.
Ah! Yeah, no. These viruses are bacteriophages, so they only infect bacteria when they do decide to infect something. They do not infect humans. They are specifically after those little bacteria buggers.
They're not going to spread? They're not going to mutate?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I mean, some people are like, oh, the gray goo is coming.
I do like the spray on battery thing.
I love the spray on battery idea. If you have the viruses, if you have the base materials that they need to construct the cathode or the anode, then, you know, spray it in the right place and suddenly you've got a battery.
We're not talking like deodorant spray on battery that you just have sitting on your shelf. This is an industrial situation where it sprays the battery on, right? It's not going to be like portable.
Probably not.
Axe battery spray.
Yeah. I mean, they may develop something that's more portable for, say, military production uses.
But it's more of an industrial type.
And what they're talking about doing is they're developing it. It's part of it is that it's going to be it's nanostructured because these viruses are nano-sized, so it's all nanostructured. The material is going to be very flexible and not only spray on, but woven in. So it can be woven right into fabric. So you could be wearing your battery. The military people or people who are trekkers, road trekkers, who carry their batteries with them so they can have tons of technology, won't have to do that. It's in your clothes, which would be really awesome. Other uses are tiny rechargeable batteries for portable electronics, including smartphones, laptops, and GPS. Unmanned aerial vehicles also is another potential application there. And there are lots and lots more, I'm sure.
So look forward soon to commercials that announce your favorite electronic product and finish, batteries not sprayed on.
Batteries not infectious.
On to the voicemails to 260-TNT-SHOW. Our first caller has a question for the cable TV companies.
AT&T, this is Patrick D. from Newton, Massachusetts. I was thinking about your story the other day in which you said that cable companies lost subscribers for the first time ever. And I was wondering, if the trend continues, how long do you think it would be before they lower their rates? I'm sick and tired of paying $100 a month when there are really only about a dozen channels I actually watch. Love the show, and I'll see you at DragonCon, Con of the Dragon.
Don't forget to email Lisa at twit.tv.
That's right. There you go.
To go to the meetup. I sadly think they'll probably raise prices.
Probably. I'm hoping that before they lower prices or even keep them the same, they consider a la carte pricing. Part of the reason that I've dropped cable is the fact that, like the caller said, there are only a few channels that I like, but I have to watch, you know, or I have to have all these other ones in the package. I don't want bundled stuff. I want the ones I want. Allow people to do that. And then cable TV might find itself a little bit more competitive if it allows choice.
The eventual future for cable television, in my opinion, is becoming Hulu.
Right.
Here you are sitting on a gold mine that they don't even realize because they're trying to keep the old business model going as long as they can. And maybe this will be a wake-up call. Your profits are starting to diminish, right? You're starting to lose subscribers. While you still got 100 million people with your service already installed, make that service the box that allows you to get a la carte, not just a la carte channels, a la carte shows. So that I can stream whatever show I want, whenever I want, through your service that I'm already paying for. You will win. You are in perfect position to win. This is the music industry in 1998, right? This is before Napster for you.
They haven't figured it out yet. I'm scratching my head as to why this isn't already happening. And you've brought this up before, and we've had conversations about it. And every time you bring it up, I just go, what the crap are they doing? It's the same reason I quit getting cable, and I'm waiting around for them to do this. This is the only reason I come back, and they'll have me again if they'll do it. So they'll even get me back who quit in the first place, plus all the people that are already there be thrilled about this. It's ridiculous that they haven't done it.
Yeah, and there is somebody in the chat room who's saying this. Fair, you're saying FCC regulations prevent it. I don't think they do. I think it's licensing agreements with the networks, not FCC regulations. So if you could get the licensing figured out, and that's a tall order, believe me, I understand that, you could, in fact, provide Netflix-type streaming where you've got apps on phones, apps on your desktop, allow you to get every show you want wherever you go. You have the technology. You have the infrastructure. You can do this.
You can do it.
It's going to be hard, but you could do it.
I'm going to start a little cheering section for the cable industry.
Not only that, Tom, not only can they do it, they have to do it. Like, that is the future of things. So they either do it now or don't. Win in the end, you end up losing to some startup who's not stupid and old like you. That's how it's going to go.
How often I hear that.
I'm just thinking all the cable networks, say HBO or Showtime, they don't necessarily have to be part of cable. They can
spin off and do
their own thing or join up with another group online. I mean, there's no reason for them to stick around. And once their contracts are up.
That's why the cable company needs to figure this out fast before all those networks realize that.
Bam.
Yeah. And our other voicemail today comes from someone who has a tip for life, really, and also for femtocells.
Hey, TNT crew. I was listening to an episode from a few days ago when you covered a story that Sprint's now giving away their femtocells for free, and then you said AT&T and Verizon charge for them. It's true that AT&T and Verizon do charge for them, but recently when my father switched a bunch of accounts to AT&T, he went to them and said, hey, if you want our accounts, you'll give everybody free femtocells. And they did. So it's not a matter of them; they're charging for it. It's a matter of you got to ask for it to get it. Keep up the good work. Adam from Maryland.
Words to live by.
That's right. Got to ask for it to get it.
You ain't never going to get it if you don't ask for it.
Never going to get it.
Also, it helps to have a lot of accounts and a lot of leverage. Individuals may not have as good a luck.
Maybe.
On to the emails to tnt@twit.tv. Our first one is a quick email from Patrick Beja, who will be on the show again soon. wanted to make us aware of what's going on with French mobile operator Orange. They bought a music service called Deezer about a month ago, and they're getting ready to launch a €10 a month subscription for unlimited music streaming. Patrick says the problem, Orange's data plans are limited to 1 gig a month, and the service is, of course, exempt from that limit. The result is that Orange is basically preventing any other music service from using their network properly, as they would surely run into bandwidth issues. They'd run into that cap. They've also come out very openly against net neutrality in general, so it's not like they're trying to disguise what they're doing. This is merely a first blow. Patrick says, this seems abusive and unacceptable to me, and I feel it's our role as tech reporters to explain the dangers of these kinds of deals to the public, and the government should absolutely step in. So he's got a link that we'll have in the show notes to a French version of the story, Read Write Web. I could not find a English version, but this is one of the more bold examples I've heard of someone saying, yep, we're going to have a gig limit and we're going to have a service that goes well over that limit, but we're going to make it free if you're subscribed to us. And if you try to use that service on somebody else, you're going to run
you're
up against the limit.
For it.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, in a way, this is good because this will bring a lot of attention to an example of how this can be abused, right? I mean, finally, we have something we can point to that's very black and white. It's a really weird kind of bait and switchy kind of thing happening right there. And it would be pretty easy to quantify that and explain it to the public and get a little more outrage about these kinds of practices.
It won't make any difference in the United States because they'll say, well, that's France. But yeah, I mean, at least we have a concrete example. You're absolutely right.
We got an email from Barry talking about video games. I guess he's talking about something came up yesterday, and I'm a little behind, so I missed it. But he said, for the sake of discussion, I want to take the other side on the Medal of Honor question. If I understand correctly, I have the option of playing as a member of the Taliban and hunting and killing American troops at the same time and place where it is actually happening. And this is okay because of EA's commitment to artistic expression. My question is, how far are you willing to extend this rationalization? EA has had all the great face mapping software for the Madden games. Why not create likenesses of actual American troops, name tags and ID and all? That would really bring the cost of war home to gamers. Or would it, is his question. How about adding Al-Qaeda, even Bin Laden, as playable characters? In the end, you have no choice but to let the market decide, but it seems kind of facile just to write off legitimate concerns about appropriateness with the old, quote, just don't buy the game, unquote. He makes a pretty good point. And I tried to, before we got to this whole thing, or we talked about pre-show, I was trying to think about how this would actually go. And there's actually a game, another game that's totally unrelated to all of this, that is under a lot of heat and may not come out at all. I think it actually did get canceled. That was 3 days in Fallujah.
Yeah.
We mentioned
that yesterday. Right. And they just backed off from distributing it.
Right, so they're not going to do that at all, and they're doing that because of pressure about how appropriate or inappropriate it is, and you can kind of see why they would feel that way. But in the end, it's still about what you're willing to pay for, and if people are willing to pay for the game and it sells, then it sells. And if you don't want to buy it or you don't want to play it and enough people are like you, then they won't. It still doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it and have a conversation about it, which I think is what you were doing yesterday.
Yeah, and I think Barry's raising a good point here, which is, where is the line? I hope you're not doing, Barry, is saying, because I can take the line to this logical extreme, that means I shouldn't do it at all, right? Because that's just a logical fallacy. But I think it's fair to say, like, hey, if we put actual dead troops' faces in a video game, no one would want to play this game. Well, right. I should never
some
say
people
there's
probably,
always somebody.
Yeah.
But the large majority of us would probably say that's going too far, that's insensitive. And so that point taken, like, where is the line? Where is that point where it's gone too far? It's going to be different for different people. If you have a family member who fell in service, you're going to feel a lot differently about this than someone who hasn't. And that's important to consider.
Too far in my mother-in-law's mind is Halo. So it's completely subjective and it depends on who you are. But you know, he makes a good point about they're, you know, not just writing it off simply because it's easy to say, well, just don't buy it. I kind of agree with what he's saying. But ultimately, we are the ones that choose whether this game succeeds or even hits the market with our pocketbooks. And so I don't think that can be ignored either.
Yeah, I still fall on the don't buy it. And, you know, if enough of us don't buy it or enough of us do buy it, that will decide how acceptable it is.
Yep.
Agreed. And Dr. Mom writes in to the TNT team, it's not just PayPal accounts that are being hit. This is in regards to iTunes charges, or possibly iTunes charges. I just got a call from my bank stating that there were multiple out-of-the-country charges on the credit card I have linked to my iTunes account. Fortunately, they've voided all the charges, so it's not costing me anything, but I know that I didn't fall for any phishing schemes since I never open those kinds of emails or click on the links in emails. When I talked to the person at the bank, they said that they are getting hundreds of these bogus charges coming through in the past few days. Something is going on, and it's got to be with iTunes.
I'm willing to admit there's something more going on here than meets the eye. It's not just a phishing scam. So we'll, you know, thanks for all the folks who have sent us. We haven't read every single anecdote here, but thanks for sending us the anecdotes. And I wanted to read Dr. Mom's, not just because she's a beloved member of the chat room, but also because it's the first one we've gotten that said, hey, I don't have PayPal. I just had a credit card.
A credit card.
So, it, you know, these things do happen regularly on iTunes because there are so many ways of getting a hold of credentialed information one way or another, even if you're being careful. But it does seem like it's possible there's something more going on here.
Yeah, plus no offense to Apple, but they're not always the first ones to come out and say, ooh, we may have a problem here, everybody. We're working on it. They usually don't do that. Like with antenna problems, and I could list 100 other things, they sort of say, oh, we don't know. We haven't heard, but, you know, they just sort of ignore it. There's no comment. So the fact that they're not saying anything isn't that surprising. And this kind of evidence points to maybe there's a hole there. Hopefully they'll fix it. I wish they were a little more transparent about it, but that's Apple for you.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering if the hole that they say was fixed ever was actually fixed.
I think it was.
Or if there's...
My guess would be, yeah. Is it the only hole?
Right, okay.
Or is this just your traditional, like, putting some malware on somebody's computer and keylogging and reading plain text out of memory? I mean, there's so many different ways. It's hard to guess. But it does seem to be a lot of coincidental, circumstantial evidence that make it worth keeping an eye on. And definitely make it worth being extra safe with your iTunes and your PayPal passwords, for sure.
Yep.
All right. Great. It's always fun on Thursdays hanging out with Dr. Kiki on TNT. Thanks for being here again.
Thank you. I have so much fun.
Very excited that I'm going to be on This Week in Science today.
Yeah. Tonight, 7:30, This Week in Science.
And Scott Johnson, let the folks know where they can find you on the internet.
Go check out my webcomic, myextralife.com, and there's a lot more linked there, so go check that out. That's probably good enough.
Thanks, Scott. Always good to have you on, too. Twit.tv/TNT. TNT at twit.tv is the email, and 260-TNT-SHOW is the voicemail number. We'll see you tomorrow.